Okay, so thanks very much for having me here, Tim and Vara. It's a great possibility, I think, to exchange some ideas regarding sustainable intensification. And I guess the first two presentations were already, quite a good introduction into the topic and to the richness of this topic that we are facing. And I particularly happy that I can present some visions from a European perspective, and my talk is a bit biased by taking a European perspective, because, and here I have to correct Tim, sustainable intensification is also a big topic in Europe, and for a different reason, which hopefully will come out of the presentation, but it is a big topic and of increasing concern even. It's not only something that we discuss in smaller groups, but it is a bigger societal debate. I have structured my presentation according to these points. I first give some background information, then I say a few words about productivity, resource use, environmental impact, and I will spend quite a bit of time on the scale effect. So that's the main topic of the presentation. It may be a bit theoretical, but it has some implications the way you understand, or we understand, sustainable intensification, some of the interactions, and we heard the term scale already in several presentations. I will say some words about integrated modeling, but this is more at a general level because there is a range of models out there. We had some notion of that already in the earlier presentations. And I will say a few words about the new emerging technologies, because that's also an interesting development sort of along with the discussion of sustainable development intensification, and something that we do not want to ignore in that context. Some terms that I'm using quite throughout the presentation. One refers to the different levels of the organization that you see here exemplified, ranging from the field, farm, landscape, etc., up to the global level. And there are different spatial and temporal scales, and these things are different. Levels of organization and temporal spatial scales are something different. If we look into the spatial scale, if we look into a field or a farm, and we want to understand how that behaves at the landscape, regional level, then we usually talk about what we call spatial upscaling. And the term scale has usually the notions or the characteristics of an extent, what is the area you are considering, a landscape perhaps, the resolution, how detailed you have information, maybe at field level, and the coverage, for which fields do you have information. And the same applies to the temporal scale. But there's also that aspect of levels of the organization, and as you move across the levels of the organization, you basically have discrete changes. So a farm system is something different than a landscape system. You have different indicators, so just staying with that term, and those sort of things you want to be aware of. And you also want to be aware of the emerging properties that you only observe at a specific level of the organization, because that shapes your understanding of the system and the way you want to design it and the way you want to manage it. So these sort of different levels of organization you will see several times in the presentation. When we talk about sustainable intensification, then we also have to see that in the context, or we see that in the context of the global challenges, and some of the key challenges are listed. I'm not going into the details here, you're all familiar with this, but I want to bring out this graph that most of you are also familiar with, the United Nations Global Sustainable Development Goals, and the implication of these goals in the sustainability discussion are quite profound, because so far we have pretty much discussed one or the other goal. We talked about food security, or we talked about resource use efficiency, or healthy life, etc. Now there is really the emphasis to see these things in combination, and how they translate into our production systems is something that will keep us busy, I'm sure, over the next decades even. So these challenges are often quite global, but we know that the implications are quite local. Implications with respect to structuring farming systems, cropping systems, crop management itself, but down to the improvement, genetic work on crop improvement. And there are feedbacks, but these feedbacks are not well understood. How you, the changes in a system, in a field, in farming system, etc., feedback to the more aggregate level. This is a graph that is for our systems in Europe and also, I guess, in the US, quite often used in order to demonstrate how our yields have developed over time. This is a series of yields from the long-term field experiments that is the oldest in the world in Rothamsted Research, and you see yield development over a period of time. And the interesting part I want to point out here, that over the years considered, more than 100 years that experiment is running, varieties have changed and different management activities have also happened. But particularly this part shows quite nicely that even without the introduction of new varieties, the boost was only possible because of a further increase of inputs, in this case nitrogen. Also, the nitrogen rates that were given up until then weren't sufficient enough to give a further increase. So additional nitrogen and additional resource input had to be given. And we know that this doesn't only apply to that experiment, but it applies to all many systems across the world. And this is a global figure that most of you are familiar with, that shows the increase in the resource input into our systems for different resources, N, P, and water, and the decline in the resource use efficiency that we see. And I'm going a bit into this because that's a very critical aspect also when we talk about sustainable intensification, or particularly when we talk about that. And I'm going back to some of the very basic relationships, a relationship between an output, in this case yield, as an example, and a resource input. Can be water, can be nitrogen. And typically we see this non-linear relationship. We can observe that at the individual organ level, we can observe it at the plant level, at the crop level. We've seen a picture, a slide by Santiago, just in the first presentation. He observes it at the farm level, and we also observe it at larger levels of the organization. Quite a consistent relationship. Now, the problem is that if we are interested in a yield increase, we are pretty low at this curve, then by increasing the resource input into our system, we may rise the yield to a certain higher level. But if we are further up on the curve, in order to obtain the same yield increase, our input in the resource, on the resource side, has to be much larger. And that gives us this relationship, that the resource use efficiency declines with the increasing resource input that we have. And that makes it so difficult, even in our developed country situation, to meet the demands with respect to food security, food nutrition security, if we are relatively high up on that curve. There's another fundamental relationship that is important, and that is has been first described or published. He wasn't the first to found it, but he published it, Liebig's law of the minimum. You have heard of that. And there was a refinement of that by Liebscher and Volney in, I think, 1895, that indicates that most of our systems are not only limited by one resource or determined by one resource, but by a number of resources. And the most limiting factor is basically determining the response of our output yield to our input resource. Now, most of our systems are somewhere here in between. There are now different pathways if we talk about sustainability. In developed countries, we have a present yield situation, and we're basically discussing to do more, gain more output with the same amount of input. So we're not really interested in increasing the input anymore, but getting more with the same input. Or if you are already in big environment or larger environmental problems, we even think of keeping the same output but with less input. These are the main pathways that we're discussing in developed countries. In developing countries, it's perhaps more the question of getting more output with more input, of course in a sustainable way, but that's a slightly different pathway in the way you approach the situation. Okay, now the aspect of the spatial scale that's usually ignored, and that's the point that I wanted to make in this presentation. So what you see here is a heterogeneous field, and we have that quite often in our landscapes. It's field is not that big, maybe 2 or 3 hectares, but it has a different location, and they have different assimilation rates and transpiration rates. Here you see the transpiration rates. I could also plot the assimilation rates. This is a time plot over the season, over the day, and the more reddish the colors are, the higher is the transpiration in this case. If I would choose an assimilation rate plot, same picture here. So this plot here has a particular high assimilation as compared to this subplot here, which has a relatively low assimilation. Now, how do you manage this crop now? This is a particular challenging question. If you try to manage it according to this, you will probably give too much resources to the entire field, and you are not achieving the yield that you would obtain here because you have co-limitations at the other locations of the field.
And there is an implication for the resource use, as it is shown down here. And you're basically in a contradictory situation.
If you go for high yields, you have an implication on your resource use efficiency. You use your resources less effectively, and if you try to increase your resource use efficiency, you will not gain as much yield as you would gain in case you only go for the high yield. So that's a dilemma you can't get out if you apply one management strategy to that field.
The only way out is that you divide the field and have a technology in order to account for this diversity. So this is the only way in order to meet both demands, resource use efficiency relatively high and still relatively high output in that situation. And you can transfer the same relationship or the same problem or can observe it at the landscape scale, where you may have a field of a number of fields in the landscape, and this is an image of cornfields in the south of France, a fluorescence image of these fields measured by an aircraft. And you see how big the variability can be from field to field, and also from and also within the fields. Same problem here. How do you manage this? You want to account for this diversity in order to meet both of the aims. And the problem becomes even more challenging if you go to a landscape scale where you have diverse components of the landscape, vegetation components, not only crops, but also forest and also grassland, as is shown here in that in this plot. And what you see here is the water use efficiency of these different landscape components. And you see separate plots here for the arable land, the forest land, and the grassland. And the challenging question here is, how do you manage that landscape in order to keep the landscape water use efficiency of the landscape water use at a level that is sustainable to sustain not only the arable land, but also the forest land and the grassland? So that's quite a complex issue. You can approach it, but you need to be aware of the spatial diversity and also diversity of the vegetation in that landscape. The same problem to some extent also applies to the temporal variability. If you are interested in high yields,
you may just look at this one and shoot for this one, because this is you know, potentially possible, and you design your management in order to get to this high yield.
But to which extent this is sustainable, it's relatively easily answered. It is not that sustainable, because in most of the years you're not reaching this yield
for other factors that constrain the achievement of the potential achievement of that yield.
So your resource use efficiency, like in the spatial variability, will be much less if you just shoot for this high yield.
If you go for an average yield, because that's your experience, then you're probably better with your resource use efficiency, but you're not obtaining this high yield. You're losing out on this part.
What's the way out of this one? Way out is here, that you have very good seasonal forecasts, weather forecasts.
You have good crop models that give you information how the crop will develop in that particular year with the forecasts. And you have good data, input data, in this case here, but also soil data,
in order to on throughout the year plan your management in order to be high with respect to your yield, but also with respect to your radiation use, resource use efficiency.
Now I'm coming to another point that is to take into consideration when we talk about different scales, and that's the aspect to which extent we actually affect
affect the landscape. If we just had a small plot in the landscape where we farm, it wouldn't matter. But it's the extent by which we explore the landscape that that has an effect, and that is our concern regarding the environmental impacts.
And we can look typically at different impacts, and I've just given some examples here.
And we can measure the impact. There are different ways of doing this depending on the impact
we are considering. And now the things become interesting because there are some regulations that give us indication of how that impact or this environmental variable should look or should
develop in a certain landscape. If it's too high, we have to reduce it. The consequence with respect to the yield is shown here, so there is a trade-off, not going into this. Those sort of things are not usually connected from a systems understanding. Huh? This is something that comes from other information and feeds into those sort of relationships. There's another aspect to be considered here, and this is the aspect of the feedback. We don't really know how much the change in the N2O and the N leaching actually feeds back to this field here. We just have this field, we know, or we have some understanding that the way we arrange the landscape has an effect on the field, but we have very little quantitative understanding to by how much that actually is.
I have an example here where it's just been published, and I found it very interesting to consider here that the change in the insect biomass just recently measured in
a number of locations in Germany, protected areas, and they've measured a decline of 75% over 27 years in total flying insect biomass in protected areas. That's not on managed land. So that's an effect that that's not quite clear from the study. They can't make this conclusion, but apparently the land use around these protected areas has an effect.
These are these feedbacks that you only observe at the landscape scale. You don't observe them at individual field scales. Coming a few words about the measurement of indicators. We heard a lot about that. I'm not going into this. Typically, indicators are derived at different scales. We had two presentations on this. The proposed way to go, and we have done this and tried this in different projects, is to not scale the indicators or derive the indicators at the particular level of scale, but use models that you use as a basis in order to scale your processes or relationships that are relevant at the crop, farm, landscape level, and from those models derive the indicator. But that means that you have good systems understanding, and there's lots of work to be done in order to get there. A few examples. We have done quite some work on this in recent years. One example refers to a Maxur project where we have sort of made a conceptual framework of how our systems work in Europe mainly. And we've employed a range of models and linked these models across the crop, farm, regional level, and different types of models with respect to weather, crop growth, I mentioned that already, farm economy. Quite a large effort, but quite helpful in order to understand some of the cross-scale system dynamics. Another effort I want to refer to is the ACME project that takes also the step to the global level, and we've used some information from this project also in Maxur. And more recently, we work on a project called SysTech, assessing options of sustainable intensification of agriculture for integrated production of food and non-food products at different scales. And also here we have an indicator framework. Again, in all the projects, the indicator frameworks look differently.
A way of structuring it, we have a visualization framework, we have that discussion before. And we have a set of models, these are just two shown here. But we follow a modular approach because we know that metrics will change, indicators will change, models, demands for visualization will change, etc.
Also, So the modularity of the approach is quite important in that project. We also have projects in Africa, and I'm not going into this now. One last slide here with respect to the technologies. I mentioned that before. There is a large development happening in the field of sensing, in the field of robotic, IT, data assimilation, etc. And I guess there's a lot of scope in order to use these technologies to get forward with respect to the sustainable intensification. I gave some examples before. I want to sum up some concluding remarks. There are scale effects on productivity, resource use efficiency, and environmental impact. I showed some examples with respect to spatial, temporal, and organizational scale. There are direct effects regarding the heterogeneity, and there are indirect effects regarding the higher level feedbacks. The sustainable intensification assessment and measures need to be scale specific, and they should consider scale interactions. And process-based modeling or dynamic systems modeling can play an important role in order to generate these indicators. An important aspect is the involvement of stakeholders in the defining of these indicators. I don't need to go into this, that was said before. And last point refers again to the scope and the potential for these emerging technologies also to be utilized for this application. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think that was very stimulating for everybody. I think we're a little bit behind schedule, but we have the benefit of having the room for time afterwards. So I think if there's one or two quick questions, we can take those.
Thank you for raising an interesting and very important issue. I think, yes, the scale issue would be a challenge in the assessment of sustainability. This is particularly the example that you have provided, insect biomass, and some of these can only be visible at the landscape scale. Do you also think there might be challenges relating to collective action problems, like collective action about different farmers? Because at the landscape scale, there might be different landowners with different competing interests, and do you think it would be a challenge bringing these people together?
Yes, I think it's very good that you make that point.
I didn't go into this, I skipped the whole farm level. There's also something to consider at the farm level regarding these cross-scale interactions, but I skipped that because I knew that Santiago would say something. But it's absolutely relevant. I think if you want to address issues of sustainability at the landscape scale, that you need to consider the farmers, and you also need to consider the collectiveness of the farming community. It doesn't help if you get a subset of 1, 3, 5 farmers working according to your concept or your understanding of sustainable intensification. It needs really the involvement of the farming community in order to have these at the landscape, the effects that you observe and make use of these effects really happening. If you're not engaging them, this is the example of the, therefore actually I brought this in, this example of the insects. Because if you only convince a subset of the farmers, the other farmers may still have an impact on your environment at the landscape scale that will sort of overwhelm or overlay the beneficiary effect that some of the farmers could contribute to the landscape behavior. So it's really something to consider. We have very little understanding how many, how much area you would need in order to have some landscape responses in a very early stage. But we already know, and our work goes into that direction, that we always try to work with the farming community rather than with individual farms. So it's very relevant to make it short.
Yeah. Time for one more, and then we're going to move on.
Yeah, it's also related to the landscape level, because normally we will see that inefficiencies at the lower aggregation level may increase efficiency at the higher aggregation level. So you imagine that you have a field where you put 300 kilograms of nitrogen, and all the neighboring fields, you put zero nitrogen. And all that nitrogen that leaches away from the highly intensified field will end up in neighboring, so it's a neighboring mm-hmm. aspect. Mm-hmm. And that is the every time. So when you put the hedgerows in the fields, around the fields, normally the individual field and the individual farmer will say, I am losing area, but the collective benefits of having these hedgerows will. So how to capture that farm or field landscape efficiency gap?
Yes, that's relevant, and but the theoretical knowledge about these interactions is relatively low. So you don't have strong arguments really to prove that these lateral effects are there. I mean, to some extent we know they are there, but how much benefit you really gain from them? That's the feedback aspect that I mentioned with regard to your productivity, because you're still interested in this, and also other functions of your ecosystem. These interactions here just at the beginning, and I again have some hope with respect to better data due to these new technologies, we will be much better to understand landscape behavior. So far we weren't able, because landscape experiments are very difficult to perform with traditional methods, but with sensing and other technologies, and also being able to use and manage these data, analyze these data, we have a much better say. We know there are these things, this example of the insects, they show there is something, but the study stops by really making the causal relationship between land use and the depth of the, or the reduction of the insect biomass. So this is not really proven yet, but we are on the way, and there is something, we know that, to be further looked at. One other point I want to make, because perhaps the link to the next speaker, because I read that paper that you published, and that was quite interesting. It's a review about the use of indicators for different, you have a framework for different subparts of your framework, you may refer to that. I was just counting the indicators that have been developed at field, farm, and landscape, and regional scale. The majority of the indicators refers to field and farm scale. There are much less indicators at the landscape and regional scale. And I think that's a point that I didn't make strong enough. I think in order to address sustainable intensification, we have to address it multiple scale. You can't just address it at the farming system, you can't even just address it at the landscape scale. If you don't have the regional and the national and even larger, let's say, political system with it, you will not be successful in this discussion. It's really a complex issue. It really stretches across the different levels of the organization.
Thank you. Once again, let's give a round of applause to
Professor
Bradley.